Chapter 40, Lionizing. After Joey K. lowered the lid on the vat containing Monica, Hugh Blackwell said to him, "Joey, thank you. That was unpleasant, but it had to be done." She had explosive feelings about her sister to begin with, and adding to that her grief over the Robinson boy, she was becoming unreliable as well as emotionally unhinged. "I felt you and I could no longer trust her," Joey said. "Well, you did the right thing, boss. Babes get hysterical. Too bad about the kid, though." Blackwell said, "Yes, unfortunate. No doubt about that. He had a promising future. Shame it was wasted," Joey said. "Oh, real sorry, boss, about the kid. I didn't mean to kill him." Blackwell said, "I appreciate that, Joey. Yes, I'm sure you didn't." Joey's statement was about as bald-faced a lie as ever could be. He had, in fact, tried to murder me 3 times. First drowning, then strangling, then by asphyxiation in the car trunk. As Joey descended the catwalk, he repeated his apology. "I'm just real sorry, boss. Real, real sorry. I never meant it to happen." Blackwell repeated his answer. "It's just an unfortunate accident, so don't keep punishing yourself. They happen all the time." Joey apparently felt it was necessary to explain further. "I know, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking he hit his head, he hit his forehead on the trunk lid when I shoved him in. He had a bump there when I took him out. Maybe that's when he lost consciousness. Maybe that's why I never heard him complaining about his having trouble breathing." Joey was forgetting that he had already told Blackwell that I had shouted to him from the trunk, warning him that the police already knew. Blackwell said,
Yes. Oh, I see what you mean. That's a possibility. Yes, yes, that could be."
Just then, a resumption of Monica's slaps against the vat claimed all our attentions. Joey asked his boss,
What should we do?"
"Lock down the lid. I'll go start the bubbler. When the CO2 builds up enough, she'll pass out. I'm not saying it'll be pleasant, but it won't be painful."
"Right, boss."
Joey proceeded to lock down the lid. Meanwhile, Blackwell left the room, his footsteps receding back up the hallway. Then Joey departed too. I didn't like the sound of that bubbler business, and immediately I began preparing to make another launch to the rim. I figured if I pulled my socks on over my hands, they could be used to cushion my palms against the rim's sharp edge. However, by the time I located the socks and put them on like mittens, I stopped to frankly assess my physical condition and realized I was too tired from everything I'd been through to attempt a second spring off the bottom. Instead, I went with Plan B, figuring that if I regathered my clothing and tied them into some kind of knotted rope, I could then throw the rope over the rim and try to jam one of its knotted ends into the crease where the rim and the lid met. If I could jam it in there solidly enough, I thought there was a better than even chance I could pull myself up by it, slip over the side, suspend from the same rope, and then drop down to the floor, hopefully without breaking anything. Another possible benefit of this approach, even if it didn't allow me to achieve a full-blown getaway, jamming the clothing knot would prevent anyone from being able to fully seal the lid without first removing it. I took half a dozen deep breaths before I felt stable enough to submerge and begin gathering my clothing. However, while in the act of doing this, I happened upon another found object, one that I had forgotten I had had with me, and also one that was even better suited to my purposes. It was the rubber doorstop that I had put in my hip pocket. Jackpot. This was very good news. The doorstop ought to work a lot better as a wedge than a knot of tied clothing. Feeling reinvigorated, first I transferred both socks onto the same hand to give me extra cushioning. I then executed another enthusiastic spring off the bottom, which enabled me to grab onto the rim with a cushioned hand and hold on long enough to jam the rubber wedge into the hinge. I was able to hammer it in place a few times with my fist to make sure it was intractably seated before I let go and dropped once more into the tannin-colored liquid. Surfacing, I floated on my back to rest. As I did, I thought of what had taken place back at my dorm room when I had mindlessly slipped the wedge back into the rear pocket of my Levi's. It appeared that the advice I had gotten about the handiness of rubber wedges being useful in lockpicking also applied to jamming the lids of vats. After a while, I set to work again to create the knotted rope, tying my shirt to a pant leg. I then dove for my shoes. Searching along the bottom near the drain, I once again encountered the solid object my toe had hit upon earlier during my first launch at the rim. I grabbed it up and headed for the surface.